Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hang on to your balls. It's time for the Horror Hangout Podcast.
Welcome to the Horror Hangout, the podcast where two bearded film fans watch the 50 best horror movies ever, and then we talk about them. My name is Luke Condor with a K, and I'm joined by my regular co-host, Mr.
Mr. Ben Arrington.
Mr. Ben Arrington. How's it going, man? You alright? How are you feeling? Yeah. We've had a couple of weeks off. We're either feeling fresh or rusty. I'm
not slacking. Sure yet.
Yeah.
Fresh and rusty.
Bit of both.
Frusty.
I do feel a bit frusty around the edges.
I always feel frusty.
Yeah.
Every day of my life.
Yeah, you should clean that off. I don't know what that means. Okay. Yeah, man. What have you been up to? What have, for the past fortnight, you've been ill.
So
you've been unwell.
I did get unwell, and I was out of action for like a whole week. I was bedridden and then sofa ridden.
Yeah.
And I think I'm finally coming back to it. And people go, oh, it's a change of temperature that gets you. Change of temperature. I'm thinking, I'm not an elderly man. You know,
you can't take a slight shift in temperature.
My immune system is 30 years old. You know, it should become accustomed to how the seasons work in the UK. Or maybe that's not how it works. Maybe just getting worse as you get older.
I turn 30 next year, so I'm not looking forward to my body no longer being able to weather the weather.
That happens immediately as soon as you turn 30.
Okay, yeah, I look forward to that. Okay, man, yeah, other horror guff. Have you seen any cool stuff?
I did see Mother.
Yes.
Well, you did as well. I don't know if we're lumping that in with horror, though. Obviously, that's it's a psychological. This is very difficult to describe.
Yeah.
Psychological.
Art
fuck
house.
Fest. No, not fuck fest. I didn't mean
that.
Sounds
like something else. Yeah. What did
psychological.
You watch? Mother, did you watch Mother? I'd like to, you know, you watched the wrong one, I think.
I watched the wrong one, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it was pretty good. I mean, it's completely out there. It's a very risky film. It's completely laden with metaphor and, you know, there's so many different layers to it. You can probably see it in certain ways.
Yeah.
Visually, I think it's pretty much, I mean, it's amazing, I thought.
Yeah.
Performances are good. Sound design was, like, intense. Sound design was, like, I don't know if it's the screen I was in, but it's incredibly loud. But it was really, really unnerving. But, yeah, for a film that kind of, from a trailer, it kind of was advertised as a bit of a horror film, possibly.
Yeah, well, it's Rosemary's. I think the main thing I've seen people have issue with was the poster, which was Rosemary's Baby, but, like, a modern take on it. And it's not that film at all.
No, not one little bit.
Yeah.
I saw that. Have you seen anything else? What have you seen?
Well, I figured it's October now. A lot of people are doing what they call Hooptober, which is like I'm watching a horror film every single night for the 31 days. Is it 31 days in October? I always get that wrong. Okay. In the 31 days in October. I can't commit to that. But I'm trying to. So on the first, I watched Bubba Hotep, which is a Joe Lansdale short story directed by Don Coscarelli, who did the Phantasm films. Have you seen Bubba Hotep?
Yeah, but I've got a long time ago. Around about when it was released, I think.
Yeah, I mean,
I remember nothing about it.
It's amazing in the aspect that the side of it where it's Bruce Campbell playing like an aged Elvis and Ossie Davis playing JFK, who's like been had like a skin bleach yeah. to sort of hide it. Like those parts are really like so amazing. But then like the other bits from the Mummy, the actual Bubba Hotep in the story, were kind of like super low. I could tell like it's kind of low like budget. But I could kind of, I don't know, it seemed a little bit lazy. I would have kind of liked to see a bit more with the big fight scene at the end. Like they literally just set him on fire and then he's dead. But it's a really fun film. And I'd watch Bruce Campbell in anything, I think. He's so good.
Yeah.
And then, go on.
I'm just thinking about something else I saw, sorry.
Go on.
I saw a film called Prevenge.
Oh yeah, Alice Lowe. Yeah, is it any good?
With Alice Lowe, written and directed by Alice Lowe, sort of a very, very dark sort of black comedy where she's hearing voices from her pregnant baby. It's got like the who's who of recognizable British comedy faces. You don't know their name. it was pretty good. I enjoyed it. It was incredibly dark, funny as well, and just a little out there, very murdery, you know.
Yeah, Alice Lowe, she wrote that, and like it was made like within like a really short space of time, because I think she got the green light for it while she was pregnant, and she had to finish the entire thing while she was pregnant.
Seems quite heavily pregnant.
Oh yeah, I think she's super pregnant.
I think I've developed quite a large crush on Alice Lowe now, not because of the pregnancy.
Because of the pregnancy, okay.
I said not because of the pregnancy thing.
The murder, then.
Definitely because of the pregnancy thing.
Yeah.
I'm revealing too much about myself already.
Yeah.
Just several minutes into this podcast, and I'm trying to keep myself closed off most of the time.
Yeah. So, would you recommend it? Is it good?
Yeah, it was good.
I do want to watch that at some point, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Get it down your neck.
And I watched last night, I forced Kat to watch a film called Ginger Snaps. Have you seen Ginger Snaps?
Yeah.
It really wasn't very good. I mean, maybe it was good, but maybe it's just dated in the worst way. It's like very late 90s. Like it came out in the year 2000, but it feels very late 90s. And it's got, I don't know what it is, just every like little weird 90s, late 90s cliches in there. And it's just not aged well at all. But I guess the final like act was pretty, pretty thrilling with the whole werewolf actually like comes out and stuff. But that's my Hooptober so far. And then tonight, I don't know. We'll have to see.
I've made a list of a few things. I'm going to watch In the Mouth of Madness based on
your recommendation.
And I've got hold of a few more John Carpenter films. John Carpenter films I've never seen, like Black Rain and stuff like that.
What's it called? Black.
No. I've got hold of a few John Carpenter films and Black Rain. That's what I meant. Sorry.
All right, okay.
Black Rain, which is Ridley Scott directed, not a horror film with Michael Douglas, sort of in Japan. Yeah. Yeah, just because I was listening to the soundtrack the other day and it's insane. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm going to watch a non-horror film in October as well.
Wow. Yeah. Well, then I think after Ginger Snaps, Kat might want to not watch a horror film tonight. She didn't enjoy it.
Oh.
But
that's a shame.
Okay, so tonight's feature presentation, we're talking about we were going to do The Omen, but we figured Gerald's game's just come out. I think I quite enjoyed it. I don't know if you enjoyed it yet. We'll have to talk about it in the show. But it was worth talking about anyway on the show. And so came out on Netflix last Friday, I think.
Yeah.
It's based on a Stephen King book, as are all films from now on.
And, what are you watching? Oh, it's this new film that's come out. Is it based on a Stephen King book? No. No way. I don't want to know.
Yeah, no one. I mean, how many? It's been like four or five things that have come out from Stephen King this year.
How is that? Also, like three things so close as well. Like, how has that happened?
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's his 70th birthday this year as well. So maybe everyone was trying to get in on that action.
Yeah.
70th birthday magic.
In on the hot 70th birthday action.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so Gerald's Game, it's got a 90% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. Chris Stuckman gave it an A or an A minus.
Of course he did.
7 out of 10 on IMDb. We haven't got like an Empire magazine thing for it, but I've just picked out a couple of the Rotten Tomatoes reviews. As a renewed wave of interest in Stephen King continues to crash on our cinematic shores, we can only hope that future adapters and adaptations will be so well matched. Another one, Gerald's Game is an excellent piece of cinema and proves that story and performance can overcome even the most unfilmable source material. So have you read the book? You've heard of it? What's going on there in your life?
I haven't actually read the book. I've recently purchased the book and I've added it to the big pile of to read books.
Yeah.
But I kind of like read up a little bit on the story. Not like rude, no spoilers or anything before the film came out. I thought I'll just wait for the film. I thought it was pretty good. I can understand why people would say it was unfilmable. I can imagine that a lot of stuff gets elaborated on massively in the book.
Yeah.
Do you want me to read the synopsis?
Yeah, can do. Yeah, you've got it there.
Okay. So Gerald's Game is a 2017 American survival horror film directed and edited by Mike Flanagan and written by Jeff Howard and Mike Flanagan. Bad sentence there. It is based on Stephen King's novel of the same name. The film stars Carla Gugino and Bruce Greenwood. So while trying to spice up their marriage in a remote lake house, Jessie must fight to survive when her husband dies unexpectedly, leaving her handcuffed to their bed frame. Well.
Lovely. Yeah, so Mike Flanagan is a director I really kind of like now. I mean, I really liked Hush, and that was made in the same model. So it was like a small, straight to Netflix, just like a small set piece, a reasonable budget. I don't know, he seems to be like a bit of a director to watch. I mean, yeah. What did you think to the film in general? What's your initial thoughts? Did you enjoy it?
I've not actually seen any of Mike Flanagan's films, so I've not seen Hush. I've not seen, is it Oculus?
Yeah, I watched that once. I didn't really think too much of it, but apparently it's worth a rewatch. I think I kind of lumped it in with like Ouija and, you know, those sort of things. Apparently it's more than that, and I just didn't pick up on it.
Yeah, but I think, I mean, essentially this is kind of like a captivity thriller slash with horror elements, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think, I've always really liked captivity thrillers. A lot of people obviously kind of think films that are shot in one location are a bit lame and they kind of expect more, but I've kind of always found them really good, quite tense.
Yeah.
And this was kind of no different. Obviously, I've got nothing to compare it to because I haven't read the book, but from everything on screen, I thought it was pretty ace, and all the extra additional little bits or little supernatural and visions and voices and stuff was all pretty good. All sort of heightened the tension. But I guess it's just one of those films where you constantly go, why don't you do this? Why can't you do this? And I just kept thinking, with the handcuffs that she's been handcuffed with, Jesus Christ, her husband's really gone to town. We're making sure he's got the legitimate. She's not getting anywhere.
Yeah.
So, can you just get some little kinky ones with like frilly pink on them or something?
Yeah. Like these plastic, plastic chain links. Yeah. No, these are heavy duty.
These are heavy duty. He's got this from a police officer. He's got them from a jail cell.
Yeah. Yeah. But then again, like maybe it wouldn't be as sexy for them to be snappable. Do you know what I mean? Like he needs to.
I didn't find it sexy one bit. I mean, and Carla.
Well, no,
Gugino is a very attractive lady.
Yeah.
But I didn't fancy. I didn't. Before the heart attack and after the heart attack and during the gory bits.
Yeah.
I wasn't the horny one iota.
Yeah, no, me neither. To be fair.
Something's wrong with us. We need to get checked.
Right. so wrong with us. I've got to say this film. So I have read a bit. I read it actually. Finished it maybe a month ago, and it's a near perfect adaptation for better or worse. Like
by near perfect, you mean like it's almost like an identical book to try.
I mean everything's translated like pretty much spot on or streamlined to get everything from the book into the novel. So I mean into the film. So for example, like. The main change is that in the book, she doesn't see Gerald get back up and she doesn't hallucinate herself. She hallucinates all these people she's met through her life. And it's about, and like, there's also like different various voices that she doesn't know who's coming from. And it's kind of like that bit, she hallucinates like about six or more people, I think it is. And whereas this is just her and her husband, and they sort of actors that role, but it works kind of better. It's a bit more streamlined. It's a bit makes a bit more sense. But other than that, like it's pretty much identical, I think, from what I can remember.
Yeah, I mean, it's always difficult when that sort of happens with a book. Because I mean, just an example, The Girl of All the Gifts, which was last year, was that last year?
Yeah.
I mean, that was like an adaptation which was almost play by play exactly the same as the book.
Yeah.
And it worked, but it's always one of those things. It's very unexpected, I think. I never ever expect, when you've read a book, you kind of expect to see a certain version of it on screen.
Yeah.
When it's so similar that almost every beat and every, it plays out exactly the same way, it can be quite disappointing. So, I mean, I don't know how you feel about that, considering you've read the book.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I you definitely picture it in a certain way in your head. And if it's adapted like this, where it's so sticking to the plot and not making many changes, there's a bit of like a cognitive dissonance where things don't look quite how you pictured in your head, or things aren't
Did you imagine those handcuffs to be so hardcore?
Yeah, well, in the book he does go into detail about where he gets handcuffs from
where does he get them? Where does he get them from?
He's got like a police mate or something.
Police mate.
And they're like,
of course he has.
And they're like,
oh, he's got above the carpet.
I think it's something like that. Or he goes into detail, but they're men's handcuffs. So she's supposed to be able to try and get out a little bit because there's a little bit of give. But yeah, I don't know. I would say it kind of brings the question, like, what is the purpose of an adaptation? Like, is it supposed to just translate the book to the film medium so perfectly where it's the exact same experience, or is it supposed to have a bit more of a creative swing to it and its own take on?
I've always kind of thought an adaptation doesn't need to be an exact translation.
Yeah,
I always expect to see something new or something elaborated on or something changed based on whatever the filmmaker is. But I can understand why certain book adaptations would be completely translated to page, because some people just think, this is a great story as it is. I just want to bring it to more people who would never read the book, but people who probably watched the film. So to adapt it in that way, exactly as it is from the page, that's obviously doing a duty for the story and the author and the book.
But
I think sometimes certain stories are much more open to interpretation. So obviously, famously, The Shining, which was adapted, which I love the book and I love the film, but obviously famously Stephen King didn't approve of the book, and it is, and sorry, of the film. Yeah, I'm sure he approved of the book.
Yeah, this is shit.
This is shit, man. And Stanley, it was very much a Stanley Kubrick film, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
But that's the thing. It's a quintessential Stephen King story. But when you watch that film, it's entirely a Kubrick experience.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it depends on who the filmmaker is who takes on the adaptation.
Yeah, yeah. I do feel like Mike Flanagan is... I'm trying to figure the best way to describe Mike Flanagan, from what I've seen anyway so far. I feel like he's a craftsman more than an artist. And I don't want to say that like takes away from any visual flair or any sort of creative choices he makes in this film and the stuff he's made before. But, or because I know he writes as well. But maybe it's something to do with the sort of the lower budget or the way he's sticking completely to the source material. Feels like he's a craftsman. He's like...
I know what you mean.
There's less of an auteur sort of thing happening there. And it's a bit more of a, I'm going to make the best thing, the most... I don't know what I'm trying to say. He's trying to like make the best version of that for that medium, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But you probably do feel like that because you've read the book.
Yeah,
Because you know how that translation's happened.
Yeah,
whereas me, I having not read the book, it's obviously hard to make any sort of comparison. But I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Between being a craftsman, it looks good, it does the job, it ticks all the boxes.
On the tin. Yeah.
It does what it says on tin.
Yeah.
But there's no like there is some visual flair in terms of like some of the sequences with the eclipse and the sort of red is used and sort of in some of the dream sequences.
Yeah.
I know what you mean. It's a very cut and dry, here's a good looking film. I mean, love or leave it.
Yeah. I mean, so I do want to talk about the ending. I guess we'll talk about the ending a little bit more when we go into it, because that's like the sticking point for most people. It stuck with me a little bit in the book as well. I wasn't quite sure if I really need that coda, But I'm interested to get your opinion on it. But let's loop back around when we
go through
the plot a bit more.
Yeah, we'll loop back around. But I'm assuming the ending of the book, the ending in the film is the same as in the book.
Exactly the same. Yeah, like
exactly the same.
Note for note. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So the key players in the film, we've got Carla Gugino as I think that's where it's pronounced name as Jesse Burlingame. Bruce Greenwood as Gerald Burlingame. Chiara Aurelia as a young Jesse. And Carol Streakin, I have no idea how to pronounce his name, as a Raymond Andrew Joubert. Also goes by a different name in the film. We'll talk about that. But the story sort of opens. We've got Jesse. It just sets up the film. So we've got Jesse and Gerald. They're driving to some like remote country house sort of thing next to a lake. They nearly hit a dog. It's starving. It's a pretty big... I didn't think it looked that starving. It looked pretty meaty to me anyway.
It looked like it's seen some shit, that dog.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it definitely
ate,
definitely
and ate it. Yeah.
And ate it.
Yeah. And then, so they drive past it. She says, poor dog. They get to the country house. In my head, when I did read the book, I kind of pictured the country house being a little bit more... less modern, I guess, is what I'm trying to think of. But it looked very nice anyway. Gerald obviously has a bit of bank, a bit of dollar.
Gerald, for some reason, I don't know why, the name Gerald just feels funny to me. I mean, I don't want to offend any Geralds out there, but especially the fact that it's in the title of the film. I don't know why. It just feels a bit... When I'm telling people about this film and I say it's called Gerald's Game, everyone kind of has the same reaction, which is, Gerald. Gerald. Yeah. And then you think about the name, I think... Yeah,
it's,
Gerald.
It's not a name that you really get much in England. No,
I do know a Gerald though.
Do you?
So yeah, he's not going to be listening, so I can say what I want about him. But he might be.
Yeah.
But yeah, Gerald.
Yeah,
Jer. I think he shortened it to Jer, which never felt right to me.
Jer, it's got to be Jez, right? Like you go Jer, Jer.
It was Jer. Okay. He shortened it to Jer.
Jezza.
Big bad Jer.
Yeah,
Jezza.
Okay, so yeah, so we also get like the idea that they're not quite happy in the relationship. There's a bit of an intimacy issue. Like Jezza tries to stroke her thigh as they're in the car. She like grabs his hand, pulls it away. This is what I do when anyone on the bus tries to touch my thigh. grab their hand and say, not now.
you just gotta let it happen.
You can't let it happen.
You just gotta let it happen. It's just nature. Yeah.
So they get to, we get the idea that they're trying to rekindle the sex life. They get to this house and Jezza takes some, pops some pills. He has a bit of Viagra, washes it down with a bit of moist looking water. It looks very refreshing. And also Jesse feeds the dog, which this doesn't actually happen in the book, but she feeds the dog like some like really expensive Kobe beef or something. It looked quite tasty to me.
Some steak which costs like $200 a cut, and she's just slinging it about like it's any old shit, giving it to a mangy dog.
Yeah,
he ain't happy about it though.
No,
Gerald.
He covers it up. He didn't go like doesn't blow his load just then. Like you know what I mean? He's like, I'll take it out on her when she can't hit back. You know.
Yeah. $200 a Kobe beef was it?
Yeah. So then I think we sort of at this point I feel like it's the first like 20 minutes or so, it's just setting up all the game pieces, just getting ready to like knock them all down. It's like Mousetrap.
I mean, I thought they do get down to it pretty quickly. Like, there's no official foreplay. I mean, I guess it's part of the foreplay, but there's no official like dining or there's no fluff. It's like basically lay down on the bed. And... Well, who could say?
Not in the 70s anymore.
It wasn't confirmed. So he pretty much just goes, lie down on that bed. You've got a lovely new negligee on. That's a word I don't say very often.
Yeah.
We've got a lovely new negligee on, and I'm going to handcuff you to this bed.
Say that again. Negligee. Yeah, I like how you say it.
Neglected negligee.
Yeah. Nighty, that's what I call it.
Oh, you look bloody lovely. Isn't that nighty? You do. Nighty.
Yeah.
Too much.
So she pops on the negligee, and then Gerald gets out the handcuffs, the heavy duty office police mate handcuffs,
and he's all automatically in his pants.
Yeah, he is. He's also very, you know, he's got a hot rocking bod, which yeah. I didn't read in the book.
He's got a hot rocking bod.
He's kind of bulging. Like a bit of a distended stomach happening, and this is like, I'm a model on the part time. Yeah,
yeah. He's yeah. like, he's got it going on. He's very yeah. sinewy. Very large nipples. I didn't notice that either.
I noticed one.
But he's just got tiny pants on.
Yeah, he has got tiny pants on.
But even though he's in good shape, and he's popped a bit of Viagra,
yeah,
clearly, you know, this isn't a good combination.
Yeah, yeah.
Because something happens.
Yeah. Yeah. So he does a little dance out of the... I don't know. Does he do a dance? I think he might do a dance. I can't remember quite clearly.
He did the worm, I think.
Did the worm. he popped on like the Stone Cold entrance music, like came out of the bathroom.
He might as well have, because she was pretty... She might have been feigning that she was into it, but like he couldn't do or say anything. Yeah. He was obviously giving it the old house home invader fantasy, saying, "Oh, I've just came in and found you handcuffed here. What are you going to do when your husband comes back?" And she ain't into it. She's a bit like, "Oh, fucking hell, Jesus,
yeah, this is weird.
That's creepy."
Especially when he tries to get her in a Boston crab. This is not what I expected, Gerald. Okay,
Gerald.
So he ties her up, and then all of a sudden, like, she sort of doesn't really like it. She wasn't expecting it to be quite so real. I do feel like this part of this film, this kind of emotional battle that they're having here, where Gerald says, "What if I don't? What if I won't untie you? What if I won't take the cuffs off?" I feel like it's what makes this film kind of special, and like, or the story kind of special, where like a lot of captivity thrillers. There's almost like something quite shallow, or in most horror films, the characters are quite shallow, but there's kind of, and this, and also her relationship with her dad, there's some really complex stuff happening. Like, it's almost like there's a lot of stuff happening between what they're saying to each other, like between the lines even.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah, definitely.
So, in this, he just says, "What if I won't?" In the book, he says, he pretends that she... her saying she doesn't like it is part of the game, and she says he's sort of reasoning that he's going to rape her basically. And but anyway, he gets on her, and then what happens? You need a
code word in these situations. They need to establish a code word from early on. The code word can be anything. It could be Kobe steak. What do you say? Big nips.
Yeah.
Big nips. Why? Thank you. No, I mean, it's a code word.
Code
words. So he should have established that early on, and then there wouldn't have been any faffing, because clearly it stressed him out. He got all stressed and pent up, and then he had a bloody heart attack, didn't he?
He has a heart attack. Kind of falls on top of her. She kicks him off, and he cracks one off. I mean, his head.
And he rolls off the bed and cracks his noggin open, and then she obviously sees the blood. I thought she did pretty. Carla Gugino, she did really well at like being in constant despair, because I felt like that must be exhausting as an actress, like just doing all these different scenes and just being like despair.
Yeah.
You know, and it didn't annoy me either, because I think
ludicrous, like. It never felt like, oh, she's acting. You know what I mean? Like, it felt like a really well put together performance. Right, so Gerald pops his clogs and he falls over, cracks his head. We see some blood pouring out. This is the setup now. So now we're kind of settling into the rest of the film. We know that Jessie is kind of stuck.
Settling into a nice, relaxing film.
She's fucked, but she wasn't fucked. You know what I mean?
That's no one wants to be left like that. No. She's flat, so she's basically stuck. She's handcuffed to the bedposts. She can't like lift the handcuffs off. She can't like pull her hand out. These handcuffs are they're doing their job really well. And the phone is like too far away, even though she knows that isn't it off or the battery's run out. There's no one around for miles, so no matter how loud she shouts, no one's going to go, "Oh, someone's handcuffed to a bed. I better go and see if they're all right.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen. So she's pretty much screwed. She needs to find a way of, A, surviving until somebody arrives.
Yeah.
It's pretty loose that someone might find her. Like, a maid has already come and cleaned up, like, yesterday, so she won't be back for a while.
Yeah, well, Gerald says that he's arranged it so no one will come and disturb them for however long.
I mean, that's nice of him, really, isn't it?
It's a really good situation for like a thriller. It's a really good idea, especially when the next part where they left the door unlocked and the dog that she fed earlier wanders in, and it's like, oh sweet, or you can go get help, Lassie, go sort of help get some help for me, and then the dog's like super hungry, just starts lapping at Gerald's blood. And then, like, this is a really well way. It's just like starts peeling bits off of Gerald, and you don't know what's happened, because you can't see the body. It's kind of obscured by the end of the bed, so it's kind of left to the imagination a little bit of like what the dog is actually doing to the body.
Peels a bit of the body off, and then goes and sits down and chews on it.
There was a really good bit where he's like, the dog is like pulling on like I don't know whatever they use to make it look like. Like Gerald, bits of Gerald.
Yeah.
But it like had this like weird little loose thread of Gerald tendon, and it like kind of pops out of it.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Mouth like just snaps. It's really well done. There was a nice little callback to when a little bit of foreshadowing when Gerald said to the dog earlier in the film that it'd be the best. The Kobe beef would be the best meat you'd ever eat.
And yeah.
It still is.
I can't imagine Gerald being any more delicious than a $200 cut of Kobe beef. But you know.
Yeah. Especially like just like the fatty bit under his arm, I think he sort of munches on. Okay, so so this is where the like when you go into this film or into this story, you kind of feel like, well, what? I mean, how can he sort of span it out? Like, surely she just gets out or she doesn't. But then, like, we have like the splitting personalities sort of hallucinogenic sort of thing happening. So Gerald stands up, quickly realizes that he's actually like she's hallucinating him. And I don't know, what does he say? He says you're trapped, basically.
He basically says you're screwed. You're never going to get out. And then it's almost like she's got the angel and the devil, one on each shoulder. So she's got Gerald, who's like the negative force, who's the one saying like, you know, no matter how loud you scream, no one's going to hear you. And then we got obviously hallucinating a version of herself,
who's
kind of the positive, the one who's kind of trying to nudge her, trying to sort of show her that, you know, she's got everything she needs to escape.
Yeah.
There in front of her. And it's kind of like she's the kind of one who nudges the plot along by kind of showing her certain things.
Gerald is they're kind of like airing a lot of the grievances at this point. And although you kind of know it's kind of Jessie talking to herself, they're kind of having like a pretty open conversation about their relationship and like where it went wrong and stuff. And it's kind of like a nice little bit of catharsis for her. At some point, I don't know when it is, but they kind of realize that they kind of realized that our mind is completely gone.
Are you all right? Have you been handcuffed to a bed
I know what point I was kind of making. Okay, so they kind of realized that there's more history to there's something else that happened in the past. I think it's like the other Jesse, the hallucinogenic Jesse, says this isn't the first time you've been trapped or something. And then even the hallucinogenic version of Gerald is like, what are you talking about? And that's kind of aspect of her personality. It's kind of weird that she sort of separates herself out like that.
Yeah, so it's good. So she's like hallucinating him, but she's hallucinating him as he was. It's not like she's hallucinating him as part of herself. So she's obviously like suppressed something from her past, but it's almost like that suppression is the key to her surviving and escaping, because she survived something terrible in the past. So now she's going to be able to survive this, because she's already survived something so terrible that you couldn't fathom. And now she's going to be able to survive this. And then it starts comparing sort of this prison to what she had with her childhood, and then that prison to her marriage.
Yeah. So I think so at this point it starts to jump around a bit. I think there's a moment where she's trying to get like the glass of water, and then there's a bit of a 127 hours sort of vibe of her just trying to survive, where she manages to get the water off the thing and makes a straw out of like a tag, like a clothes tag or something. There's all this sort of stuff happening, but then at some point we go into a bit of a flashback of her as a kid. She is out. I don't know how to describe this bit. I mean, this is probably, when I think about this book and this story, I always think there's going to be two bits that really divide opinions. There's going to be the ending, and there's going to be this really sort of the most horrific part of the film is the moment with her dad on the lake during the eclipse.
So obviously this is just like a flashback to her past when she's there. Sort of a lake house type thing.
Yeah.
And her mum and her sisters go out on the lake, and she gets left with her dad. And we sort of understand that she's got a good relationship with her dad, that she's a bit of a daddy's girl, and that she kind of like worships him at some point, because there's a little bit of tension, a strange bit of tension between her mother and her. Almost that her mother's like annoyed that she's so sort
that
of
she's
like,
taking her dad's favor, or
it's almost like that. But then obviously it gets completely undone, because as soon as the eclipse happens, she is sexually abused by her dad. And then obviously we understand afterwards that he's obviously a very, very manipulative person.
Because he
like, in order for her to keep her quiet, he kind of like flips it on her head, on its head, and then sort of says, we're gonna have to tell your mom about exactly what happened. She's gonna be upset about this, this, and this, and kind of like guilt trips Jesse, who's how old is she in this?
16 or something, quite young, maybe even younger than that. But he plays those cards like so perfectly to set her up, to like lock her into her own logic in a way.
So she's the one who insists that they keep it a secret. She's the one. So it's not like the sexual abuser, the one who's saying you have to keep this as a secret between us. It's the victim who's saying that. And obviously that is a unique way of sort of showing it, especially on film, because I think anytime we sort of see that sort of scenario in film, it's done a certain way. But to see it sort of from that view just made him even more despicable, I think, because obviously. Not just the act, but it's obviously the way he treated her afterwards. Obviously, they're trying to make the comparisons between how that happened and then obviously her marriage, the fact that she married an older man, a man with money.
And there's also like the visual metaphors keep popping in. So we keep seeing Gerald like he's suddenly wearing the shirt that the dad was wearing earlier in life, and kind of it's an interesting way to sort of kind of blurred those lines. I would say that he is the most evil character. Her dad is the most evil character in the film. But then there's also the Moonlight Man who like starts to rock up in the middle of the night.
Yeah. So we understand what we think of the Moonlight Man is that she's dehydrated, she's exhausted, and that initially at this point in the film you think she's hallucinating this Moonlight dude who's like a representation for death, I kind of assumed, because he's got like a little bag full of trink. What's he got? A bag full of bones.
Bag of bones and like jewels and trinkets and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, we because she's hallucinating so much and because she's having so many callbacks to her past, this kind of fits in as being just another hallucination.
Yeah, I really like it. So I love at this point, like there is an element of, is the Moonlight Man real? Is he not? Is it just in a mind? Is he hallucinating it? Or I is think this? Go on. Yeah. So you tell me what are you thinking? What do you
think? I think at this point, I was just thinking she's hallucinating him, and he's the physical manifestation of death, because Gerald's sort of ghost, or Gerald's the hallucination of Gerald says that when he comes back, he's gonna get you.
Yeah,
and that's gonna, and you kind of think that's her fear that she's gonna die handcuffed to this bed, manifesting itself as that. That's what I kind of thought. I didn't.
So you didn't think any supernatural element at this point?
No, I think because there was so much hallucination throughout. Yeah. I just thought it was just another thing she was hallucinating.
Well, the thing, the bit in the film that kind of makes me think he's more than just hallucinating, like she's making it up, is that the dog runs out of the house when it turns up. So in the book, they make a bigger point of it, where the dog is like, you get the dog's point of view, and he's like, there's something here in the house. I need to get out of the house, and it's kind of this other thing. But in this, like the dog runs out, and I kind of thought like, when I was watching this in this part of the story, I was kind of like, I love how like you don't know, like it could just be in a mind. It's a really fucking creepy looking dude in the shadows. Or it could be death, like coming to maybe some sort of demon thing that comes to those who are like trapped in these sort of situations, and she's bordering on passing on to the next life or whatever. But yeah, it's so creepy. This is like, I think without it, Gerald's Game would be a great film without this added element of the Moonlight Man. But he makes such like a visual, he adds such a creepy extra layer to it all.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Very odd looking, very odd shaped head.
Yeah. 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 He looks like a tumor. Yeah.
Yeah, and obviously the represent the sort of red glow of that solar eclipse in his eyes as well.
Yeah, yeah. So we have a lot of like there's a bit more to and fro in between the past and what she's hallucinating and all this stuff. And then there's a bit. There's probably maybe the only jump scare in the film. I think it's maybe two jump scares where it's her as a kid lying on the bed, and then like there's like a licking sound. The sound design in this film is pretty great. There's like a licking sound, and she looks down, and it's like the Moonlight Man just licking her feet, and then she wakes up, and it's the dog in the modern day. But yeah, that bit freaked me hell out.
That was freaky, man. Yeah. Like, yeah, I was definitely like, ooh,
yeah,
that put the willies up me.
Did it? Okay.
It put the willies right at me, yeah.
So at some point, I think at some point we start to like come towards the end now. I start to get like towards her getting out, because I think she's getting cramp in her hands. Like she's like, it's just becoming painful.
Yeah, she sleeps at one point, and her arms are sort of leaning right down on the handcuffs, and she sort of wakes up and she's like,
yeah.
Which it's painful, you know, cramp's painful. Waking up after you've been handcuffed to a bed all night is not pleasant.
Yeah, yeah. So at some point she we realize why she's been thinking back to the past. It's not because of the sexual abuse, although that has sort of this is a bit of a cathartic thought process for her. It's also there's a particular memory that she's trying to think back to, or like her subconscious is trying to point it to, is when they're at a dinner table when she's a kid, after the whole thing happened, she gripped onto this glass so tight that it crushed and cut her hand. There's loads of blood. And all of a sudden, she suddenly remembers in the modern day, in the present day, holy shit, blood is, fresh blood is like, what did you say, slicker than oil or something? It's a very Stephen King sort of a little thing that she says.
Yeah, she says the blood is like slicker than oil. So if somehow she manages to cut her arm, she's going to be able to slip out of that lovely handcuff. It's easy, super, super easy, and it won't hurt a bit.
Yeah. So, what did you think of the scene? Because I struggled to read this bit. Like when I was reading it on the bus, I kept having to stop and look away. And at the same time, when I watched this, watch this part of the film, I just struggled to keep my eyes on it. But even the sound design, which is so so gruesome.
I think this was the kind of thing. This was the kind of, like, there's a few different types of injury which I see, like, in film or, you know, and that really sort of make me cringe. I never knew that this made me cringe as much.
Yeah.
But as soon as this started happening, I was really like, oh, like I could feel it. And you know, sometimes when, like, you witness something happening in a film. And then you start to feel like, my hand, like, it hurts, it aches. Yeah. I can imagine that happening to my hand.
Yeah.
It was like that. So, I mean, it was super, super effective.
Yeah. I've seen it referred to as the degloving scene. And it's basically like...
Even that word, man.
Yeah, yeah. So
even that word, like,
hooks
is horrible.
Hooks the, like, a shard of glass in the shelf. She manages to, like, cut really... Oh, you know what? Even thinking about it now is good for me. Because I'm a little bit worried of blood anyway.
I was a bit like, why was she slitting her wrist? Surely she should just, like, cut her hand and then she'd have blood all over her hand anyway.
Yeah.
Why does she need to, like, slit her wrist?
Well,
like,
I don't know. In the dangerous book, they talk about how, like, she needs, like, a lot of blood for it to... So she needs to cut the vein to... or the artery to get enough blood to do it. But I don't know, I was thinking the same thing. I guess if you cut your hand, it'll bleed, but I don't think it'll bleed quite like it. Oh my God, even thinking about it, it's going through.
I was handcuffed to a bed for days, but I don't know if I had the balls to do that.
Yeah.
I just, like, get a little bit of glass and, like, cut my finger and go, oh, well, I tried.
The only thing I can liken this to is that scene in 127 Hours, and that was really difficult to watch, but I found this worse.
Sound design, but that was the sound design as well in 127 Hours, that when a certain part of his arm breaks, it's just like...
Yeah, and oh my God, yeah, and in that film, they had the bit where it's like, there was like a weird, like, buzzing thing as he caught on the vein or like the nerve. It was so good, yeah. But if anything, I think people will remember this scene as being like one of the most horrific things. It's something about the way it's what it suggests, the fact that you think you might do it yourself. There's something about it, this it's just so memorable and so horrific.
I've got quite small hands and dainty wrists, so I think I'd be all right. Like, I reckon I'd be like, get out of there. but yeah, so obviously she pulls her hand out of the handcuffs, pretty much rips all of her skin off of that particular hand.
Degloving is like the best.
She degloves it, yeah. That's the best way to say it. Yeah. It's that she degloves her hand to get it out, but she does get out.
Yeah.
But then her hand's obviously a little bit fudged.
Yeah.
I mean it's massively fudged.
Yeah. So she manages to get out at this point. She wraps her hand up. She's obviously losing a lot of blood at this point. She's like, I need to get out of here soon.
Wraps her hand up in a couple of sanitary towels.
Oh, I didn't even pick that up. Yeah. Nice.
I did, mate. Yeah. I did. I'd recognise them anywhere, you know.
So at this point she's trying to get out of there as soon as possible. I think she faints. She faints, and then she wakes up again, and the dog is like gnawing at the degloved hand. Like, oh my God, it's so horrible. She gets up again, but that pain sort of wakes her back up. She gets up as she's leaving. She sees the Moonlight Man again in the office room, whatever it is. And she says to her, like, she's not real. He's not real or something, or. Maybe not, I can't remember, but she gives him a wedding ring anyway. She sort of, it's quite a nice, like, she shed the handcuffs and now she's shedding the cuffs.
She proposes.
Yeah, I think that, yeah. So I think they're married now. I mean, that's how it ends. Definitely. She gets out, gets in the car, drives away as soon as possible. And this bit, again, freaked me the fuck out. And I knew it was coming, but, like, the way he called, the Moonlight Man appears in the backseat of the car.
Yeah.
It's all got, like, the weird... red glow of the eclipse, and then he just whispers in her ear, just says mouse. That freaked me out. That is so freaky. Yeah.
Well, of course, mouse, obviously, I don't think we mentioned, but was what her dad used to call her when she was when she was young, and during around about the time of the event of what happened.
So this is the bit where I think people are divided, where she basically gets that, she wakes up, she's got a glove now, like an actual glove for her hand. And you think that could be the film, that could be it, that you could leave it open. But then, and Mike Flanagan has talked about this, he said he understands that this ending isn't particularly loved in the book, but he wanted to, if it was in the book, and he wanted to do it exactly as it was in the book. So I mean, how did you feel about this ending?
I was a bit unsure what it meant initially. I was a bit like, what's going on?
Yeah.
But I think it told it Like it didn't go on for too long, which I think it could have suffered from if it did.
Yeah.
It kind of happened. It felt like an end. It felt like an ended. It felt just like a little. What word am I thinking of?
Epilogue or something.
Denouement.
Whatever.
Yeah. It felt like a good epilogue, which was maybe a little bit confusing, but also kind of interesting, kind of cool, because I think if it just would have been that the Moonlight Man was a hallucination, you know, that's just, you know what I mean? Then the film ends, she escapes, but the fact that it turned out he was real and he was actually in the house.
Yeah.
I mean, that's extra spooky, isn't it? Just to think he was there now and again.
I don't know. So I do like the ending as it is. I'm not like, I don't hate on it or anything. I think it's quite good. So basically, he turns out to be a real guy who, he's a bit of an Ed Gein sort of character. So he cuts people up and keeps their bones, and he grave digs and grave robs and all that kind of stuff. And then he gets arrested. She goes to see him in the courtroom. I think to prove to herself that he is real and the Moonlight Man wasn't something that she was dreaming up or hallucinating.
Whoever this actor was who played the Moonlight Man, it's definitely the giant from Twin Peaks, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah. What's his name? Carol or something. I think it's Carol. Yeah,
I mean...
Yeah, it is.
I wasn't sure if that dude was still alive. Also, that's the dude who plays... what's his name in Adam's Family?
And in Men in Black, he plays an alien.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
Who am I thinking of in Adam's Family?
Lurch.
Oh, yeah.
Really? Interesting, yeah. So for me, like, I didn't necessarily need that ending, because I kind of thought because the dog leaves the house whenever he arrives, which is probably more like talked about in the book, and they talk about him being an actual presence in the book, it leaves it kind of like on the borderline of holy shit, but it could have been real. Like, but this kind of unequivocally just says no, he is real.
Like, he's real. He's a real bloke. Look at him. He's getting
weird looking,
sent
down. Yeah.
He's weird looking. Look at his head. Looks like a Maris Piper potato.
He does. Yeah. It looks like a half popcorn kernel. like he's not quite been in there just long enough yet. Yeah, but like it's good. I think some people, I've seen some real hate for that ending. Like people are like saying how the last 10 minutes kind of ruined the entire film. Like,
I mean, it's an oddity. It doesn't feel necessarily in keeping with the rest of the film, but it didn't take away too much from me. I kind of enjoyed it. It added a sort of extra little interesting layer that was good to sort of think about. I think if the film just ended the way it did, it kind of wouldn't really stick with you, despite the degloving scene.
Yeah.
I don't know if it would have stuck with me too much. I wouldn't be thinking, well, I wonder what that means. I wonder what this. But it definitely stuck with me with the ending it had, so yeah.
It was a bit weird to have the voiceover just suddenly start in the end. Like, I understand it, but I always feel like that, unless you've got it as a bookend at the start of the film as well, it always seems a little bit out of nowhere.
Maybe it was added because, you know.
Yeah. But again, I kind of feel like that's a bit of a Stephen Kingism. Like, he likes to have, like, when I think of Stand By Me and...
Yeah,
like he likes to have the voiceover, and like Shawshank Redemption. Does that have a voice? Yeah, it does. Yeah, he likes that kind of thing, and it's a very him thing to do. But anyway, yeah. So it is what it is. I have some trivia, if you fancy it.
It is what it is. I'd love a bit of trivia.
Hey, you know, what do you think to the soundtrack to this film? I can only think of one aspect to it, and the rest are. It just kind of melted away.
I don't know if I remember anything about the soundtrack at all.
I just remember the song that's in Guardians of the Galaxy. You know, yeah, 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 yeah.
I honestly don't even remember any music being in the film. I don't know why.
Interesting.
But yeah. despite your rendition, which was note perfect, may I ask?
It was.
May I say? Sorry.
Yeah. You ready for the trivia?
Yeah, man. They better be all deep gloving questions.
They're deep questions that you may struggle. I'll be honest, like, because it's a fairly new film, I had to kind of, you know, go quite deep. So the first question is, does Gerald's Game, true or false, Gerald's Game is actually based on a novel?
Written by Gerald. True.
It is true. It's true. Well done. Took some mental cogwork there. Okay, number two. Jesse's dad was actually the little boy from E.T. True or false?
What? False.
No, it's true. Henry Thomas played Elliot in E.T. in 1982.
You are winding me up.
And then he would later grow up to be a pedophile.
No way. He did as well.
Yeah, yeah. You can kind of tell now when you look at him. Yeah.
What's his name? Henry Jackson.
Henry Thomas.
What? Henry Thomas. Henry. Right. On Henry Jackson Thomas. He is as well. That's insane. Yeah. I honestly didn't get that. Not one bit.
No, I didn't until I Googled it.
But yeah. Oh, my God. He is grown up to be a... Sorry, Henry Thomas. He has grown up to be a creepy looking guy.
Yeah, he's not so cute anymore. Okay. What is the number three? What is the name of the dog that sieges the cabin? They did mention it in the film, but kind of briefly.
What, they mentioned what they gave the dog a name?
Yeah, yeah.
Gerald.
Prince. So they mentioned it really briefly in the film.
I remember her calling him Prince, but I thought she was just calling him Prince as in just like a loving nickname. The dog reminded her of Prince.
What did you think to all of the Stephen King?
Because someone said Cujo, didn't they?
There's Cujo.
Get out of here, Cujo.
There's a Dark Tower reference. Like,
what was the Dark Tower reference?
Gerald at some point said, "All paths serve the beam," or something, whatever that saying is.
Did he?
Yeah. There's a few things like that where they just kind of threw him in, and I was like, "All right, chill out. We know."
All paths serve the beam.
Yeah. Yeah.
You forgot the face of your father. What?
Okay, so number four. What other King book or story takes place during that same eclipse that's featured in the film?
I know this. Oh, no. I know this, but I've forgotten it. Tell me.
Dolores Claiborne. Claiborne? I've not actually read it. Apparently, since,
Maybe I didn't know that then. I felt like I knew that, but now you've said it. No, I didn't.
Yeah, it's like you wrote the two novels. I think he was going to release them in one book or something, but they both became quite big. They're only connected by that eclipse, and they're kind of like feminist trilogy. Films in somewhere or another, or feminist stories anyway. Okay, so number five, true or false, Gerald's Game, the title, was actually referring to his plans after the handcuff sexy time. He had actually tucked away the game Boggle beneath the bed, and I was hoping to pull it out after the sexy action. True or false? I can tell by your face you're not taking it serious, Ben.
Boggle. I would have gone for true until you said Boggle. Boggle was the thing that made me think, nah, he ain't into Boggle. He's taking Viagra and he's buff as fuck. He's more of a mousetrap man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. That actually makes a lot more sense.
I'm going to say false. You're trying to stitch me up.
That is false, yeah. So, 3 out of 5. No, two out of 5. I think that's your lowest yet, dude.
How has that happened?
Well, I made some stuff up.
Having two weeks off.
Yes, that's it. Too
frusty. I blame Henry Thomas for having a face that's grown up.
yeah.
From child to paedophile. The Henry Thomas story.
In the film, we are saying he's a paedophile in this film. He's not.
He's a paedophile in this film, yeah. He's not a real life paedophile that they've cast.
We don't know if he isn't. Well, I mean, I don't want to say he's definitely not, but he's likely not.
Probably a very hard to detect paedophile.
He's probably not a paedophile. We should, yeah.
He might not be.
But he might be. Anyway, you never know, do you?
I mean, who's to say? If he came forward now and said, look, I'm not, we'd be like, prove it.
Innocent until proven innocent. Wait.
Guilty until proven innocent. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, dude, what are you going to rate this film?
I reckon it's fairly high. I quite enjoyed it.
Yeah, now when you think of like other good films that we've reviewed on the show, like the 50 best horror movies ever that we're reviewing, how does this, you've got to think how this fits like with those?
Well, we've definitely had psychological horrors and psychological thrillers and stuff that have fit into this, gone in the list and probably not been as good. So I'd probably be willing to give it a B, I think. B for
Bravo.
Beryld.
Beryld. All right. Okay.
B for Beryld's Bane.
Beryld's game. Okay, well done, I was going to give it a B+. I just think this is a... I think for those... The Moonlight Man with the licking of the toes, the degloving scene, the whole like concept of this film, I think it's just a really cool story. I just think it's a good film. And it's... I don't know. I would have maybe liked to see a bit more...
A bit more degloving.
A bit. I think I got too much.
Degloved.
Yeah, I'd like to see in the sequel, Gerald's second game. I'd like to see both hands of gloves. Yeah.
Degloving. Whenever you say degloving, I think of McLovin, and I imagine McLovin degloving.
Oh, poor guy. Can you? He wouldn't. He wouldn't hack it. He would not hack. In fact, his hands are probably quite, you know, scrawny.
Yeah.
They're like twigs. They'd pop right out.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay, man. Next week I think we are going to get back on the list. I think we're going to be doing this weekly again, right? Is that the?
Yeah. We've only dropped the ball a few times during this. I mean, we're on episode 30 now, so we'll carry on. One a week. You know, that's at least we can give. You know.
Yeah. Okay. Next week we're doing The Omen. It should be fun. I haven't seen that in years. I think I saw The Omen 3 not that long ago and had Sam Neill in it.
How many Omens are there?
3, I think.
Oh.
I think there's only 3. Well, I think the world kind of ends in 3. So, yeah, I think that's pretty sure.
Don't ruin it for me. I'm going to watch 3. I'm going to watch 3, then 2, then 1.
Sam Neill, by the way, he's such a good actor. Now, the more I think about it, like, he's played loads of cool roles. In the Mouth of Madness, Event Horizon.
Jurassic Park 3. Considerably better than his role in Jurassic Park.
Yeah, why did you go to 3 first?
I don't know. I've just been thinking about that film recently.
Interesting.
Event Horizon, man. Event Horizon fucked me up when I was a kid.
Yeah, me too.
That was one of those films that really fucked me up.
Yeah, it's so terrifying. And like that film, I think, got a bad rap at the time. I think maybe nowadays people are looking back and thinking, oh, it was actually pretty
good. It was one of those films I think I was watching.
Shit out of me.
I got sent to bed because I was physically terrified. And it was like, come on, get to bed. And then, bed's the last place I want to be.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was absolutely haunting. Like, you know, like that when you get the videotapes and stuff of what happened to the crew before, that freaked me out so much. Okay, so this show is brought to you by Hawk and Cleaver. Head over to hawkandcleaver.com and grab a free book. Become a patron. Over at patreon.com/hawkandcleaver. Thanks to Kovach Kalman for our theme music. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. Thanks to the listeners. If you enjoyed the show, give us a 5-star rating review in iTunes. Go over to Facebook and join the Horror Hangout Board of Advisors. Thanks to listeners again. And thanks to my co-host Ben for being a horror dude.
Thank you, Luke.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.